Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Because I'm a parent now, mine are a little bit older, but imagining just going to the crib and gone, the baby's gone, and your mind is in a million places and wondering, anybody capable of kidnapping a baby is obviously deceitful, and I believe there was a lot of deceit that went on, and there's some information that I know that hasn't been released that shows how capable somebody would be of a lie.
Seven-month-old Christopher Abeda disappeared from his crib just feet from where his parents were sleeping in the early morning hours of July 15, 1986. We know that when a child goes missing, the family always needs to be looked at. In Christopher's case, the parents remained the focus for a very long time. The Abeda family conducted their own investigation because they felt they had no choice since the police weren't looking at anyone else. In part one of this story, you heard about what happened during the first 23 years or so after his disappearance. In this second part, we're going to go over the more recent developments in the case. I'm Marissa, and this is episode 115 of The Vanished, part two of Christopher Abeda's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. If you haven't listened to part one of this story yet, I suggest that you pause this here and listen to that first. Just to recap some of the facts from part one. Christopher disappeared from his crib during the night between July 14th and 15th. His family discovered this early the next morning and called the police. Christopher's parents had been separated, and this was the first night that they had spent together in months. His father, Gil Abeda, had been seeing a woman named Emma Bradshaw. That evening, she made several attempts to contact Gil at the home he'd been living at during the separation. He and his wife, Bernice, were attempting to reconcile, but he hadn't planned on spending the night. After Christopher's disappearance, the Colorado Springs Police Department focused on Christopher's parents, especially Bernice. We know from following cases of missing children that so often we find out that the parents are involved. But imagine for a moment that you were in that situation and knew that you had nothing to do with your child's disappearance, but the police were only focusing on you. That would be incredibly frustrating. The Abedas set out on their own journey to find Christopher and never stopped. They set up a tip line and quietly investigated everyone they knew. They traveled around the country and even into Mexico to look for him. In 1991, they helped reunite a mother with her children who had been abducted from a wedding reception by their father and taken into Mexico. Authorities were unable to get the children back, so the Abedas stepped up to help. USA Today published an article about this back in 1991, calling it a daring, well-planned raid. You can watch an old Inside Edition video about this on YouTube. It's called Recovery of Missing Children. Chasing down leads all over the US and Mexico never led them to Christopher. One of the reasons that the family was focused on so much is that Bernice initially failed a polygraph. She believed that she failed this due to the medication she'd been given after Christopher disappeared. The police never publicly announced that she'd failed the polygraph, but the family released that information because they wanted to be transparent. Bernice was given a second polygraph, but the results of that test were inconclusive. Many people focus on these two polygraphs, but there is a reason that polygraphs aren't admissible in court. They simply aren't reliable. Over the years, Bernice felt like these two polygraph tests were hindering the investigation and offered to take another to help clear this up so investigators would look at some of the other leads, but law enforcement never took her up on that offer. When none of the leads were panning out, Bernice would go back over all of the information that she'd gathered, and one person that always stood out was the woman that Gil had been having an affair with. We know that the hang-up calls were linked to her. We also know that she'd tried to call Gil several times the night that Christopher disappeared. There are also some odd circumstances that led the family to wonder if they'd been stalked. In part one, Denise spoke about how her one grandmother had been getting hang-up calls too, and a woman had shown up at her other grandmother's house asking for photos of Gil's family. The woman told her that she was part of Gil's high school reunion committee and that she'd been gathering photos of all the families. When the reunion committee was contacted, they said that they had never sent anyone out to gather photos. Denise mentioned that one of her sisters, Shawnette, has Down syndrome. Shawnette had mentioned some things that happened before Christopher's disappearance that seemed strange at the time, but after Christopher went missing, the family couldn't help but wonder if they could be connected. Shawnette had been hospitalized for a couple days due to a heart defect that she has. Bernice left the hospital for a few hours, and when she returned, Shawnette mentioned that a lady doctor had come to see her. Bernice wasn't sure who that would have been, so she asked the nurses, and they said that no doctor had been in to see her. When Shawnette was released from the hospital, there were flowers waiting for her on the front porch of their home, but there was no card indicating who may have sent them. After Christopher's disappearance, Shawnette was shown a picture of Emma and said that was the same lady doctor who had visited her in the hospital. She also mentioned seeing the same woman at her school during field day. One thing that Denise told me is that it's not like Shawnette to lie. Was Shawnette being targeted? Out of everyone in the family, why her? Was it because she's more vulnerable? In 2009, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children took a look at Christopher's case. And this is when it started to pick up some steam. All along, the family had been told that this woman had been investigated, but they learned that wasn't true. Denise started meeting with the police and the district attorney's office. A new detective was assigned to the case, and some progress has been made.
A lot of information came out from those meetings, and if, you know, the communication finally was opened up because there were new detectives on the case. There are people now who, one in specifically, which is just very disturbing, he was a sheriff of Pueblo and former detective. He didn't work on Christopher's case. He was in the neighboring city, but he had a relationship with this woman. But he will not talk to the current detectives. They've tried to reach out to him numerous times. I've tried to reach out, and he won't talk to the detectives. But yet he's former law enforcement. So there's some disturbing pieces of information. There's been major conflicting statements made through the investigation. And the question is what happened to Christopher? We don't know that.
There have been rumors that this former sheriff who won't talk to the current detectives is the father of Emma's son. Is it a coincidence that he was running for sheriff back in 1986 when Christopher disappeared? Why won't a former sheriff speak to detectives about this case? Like many families, Denise has utilized social media to post information about the case on the Facebook page for Christopher and also on the FindChristopher.com website. She received a tip from one of Emma's coworkers about activity on her work computer. Denise approached Emma's employer for more information. Emma lost her job and decided to file a lawsuit against the Abeda family. Denise told me more about what led to the lawsuit.
I had received an anonymous tip. She's not anonymous anymore because it was a court case about it, but anonymous tip from this woman's coworker. And she said, I want to let you know that this person of interest is posting on Christopher's Facebook page under a fake name. This is the name she's using. Well, the irony of it is I had emailed the detective probably about a week before that. I got that email saying, hey, go to Christopher's Facebook page. This person is saying some stuff that is unusual. And when I say unusual, like providing some information that maybe not everybody would know. And so I had already kind of been keeping an eye. So I then contact the detectives and I say, hey, I got this anonymous tip. I even contact the DA's office. I let everybody know. I got this anonymous tip. She wants to remain anonymous. She's afraid. And she works there with her and she doesn't want this to come forward. But she's, you know, I then start to establish a relationship with her just via emailing and saying, I promise you, I won't give your name out. You're good. Can you this and that? So she then starts providing some additional information and crazy stuff, like stuff that I'm like, this whole pattern of behavior, does it prove she took Christopher? No. Does it prove that there's stalking patterns? Yes, absolutely. She says in the email, she stalks your family all day long at work. She can see on her computer. So she says she's posting as this person. And so anyways, in court, this person of interest says, no, that wasn't me. It was, you ready? You got to follow this. And this is where it gets confusing for people. She says, that was my granddaughter's friend who committed suicide. Her name was Jay. Well, she went under the name Jay Crystal and this fake poster. And my attorney says, oh, okay. So there was evidence, Facebook posts that you submitted that were logged in. She didn't realize that she logged on to Jay and she submitted those as Facebook posts. So as evidence, but she was still logged on as the Jay Crystal, not her other account. And it came from your computer. And she says, oh, that's because Jay had been at my house and I must have stayed on the computer. I never logged out for a couple months. And then she says, I know, I remember it was really sad. Jay committed suicide and my granddaughter went to her memorial. She came running into the house and she says, Grandma, I need a coat to go to her memorial because it's cold out. And she says, Jay used to see me in the store and she'd say, hi, Mrs. Bradshaw. And Marissa, Jay doesn't exist, okay? But she's saying all of this under oath, that this fake persona, that the coworker saw her. The whole reason I even emailed the employer, which I couldn't tell the employer, hey, your coworker wants this. But she was like, here's his email address. He certainly would know. He knows that Emma's name had been used in the local news, in the local media, like months before. So they had confronted her on it. So Emma, her employer said, yeah, I let her go because I was worried for her. Well, one, that doesn't make any sense. If you're worried for someone, you don't let her go. But okay. He says, I let her go because I was worried for her. And they gave her a dollar for me stating that she was not in a something like mentally right state of mind or something like that. Because how do I know she's not mentally right? They said she did lose income. And the issue is we filed an appeal with the Colorado Supreme Court and we're waiting. And we've been waiting and waiting. And they told me by November, December, January, February. Now I'm like, to see if they will accept the appeal based on the fact that my letter was sent, but it wasn't my intent. I had no idea they were going to let her go. As a matter of fact, I've sent that letter out to, man, dozens of people where it was, hi, my name is, I'm looking for my brother. Any information you have, contact so-and-so, contact. Now, I did add in there a paragraph about Emma. And the reason I added it is because it was about her, and the letter's public information too, but because she was telling people at work, she had this wedding ring and she was telling people it was her ex-husband who was an artist. So she was telling the coworkers and everybody. And I added that information about there because her ex-husband wasn't an artist. It was the guy that he had to take her to court. It was 3 years before she met my dad and he was an artist. And they took her to court because she was stalking them and harassment. And she broke into their house. He never was married to her. That was the guy she'd been stalking. And so I wanted to make sure that in that letter, I said something like about the artist. There was never, ever, ever anything in there like, you have a bad employee, you should let her go. Or she did this. And I just basically said, if you have information, And what we ultimately wanted was, we knew she was on that work computer on Christopher's Facebook page. And according to the coworker stalking, the coworker wrote down names of people that she had been looking up. Under oath, she completely tells the fabricated story that it was her granddaughter's 13-year-old friend. But the police have her information that she initially, when they initially confronted her about this fake person, she said, yeah, you can just say it's me. It's me. And so then she changed her story, but she had, for court reasons, she had to change the story. Sad part about it is our justice system. And if the appeal doesn't, if they don't honor the petition to appeal, then I pay $155,000 to the person of interest in my brother's kidnapping. Never, ever, ever have I heard of a case like that. And it's super duper sad, but you know what? We've been through heck our life with my brother missing and other things. And, you know, it is what it is. The information is out there for people to read and base their own opinion and form their own opinions on and so forth.
This is where things can get confusing with this case. So just to clarify, Emma's coworker had observed her writing on the Facebook page for Christopher under the name J. Crystal. Denise had noticed some comments that were posted by J. Crystal and thought they were odd. When the police weren't acting on this lead, she contacted Emma's employer to see about getting information from her work computer. But because this letter led Emma to lose her job, she was awarded over $155,000 for interference with a contract. They did find the information posted on Facebook and the website to be factual. When the coworker contacted Denise, she informed her that the Facebook page for Christopher wasn't the only one that the J. Crystal account was watching. She was also fixated on another woman. After some research, Denise learned that this other woman she was watching just so happened to be the ex-wife of a man that Emma was dating. They got in touch with this woman, and she said that the J. Crystal account had friended her, pretending to be someone that she had gone to school with. While this isn't directly related to Christopher's case, it does show a pattern of behavior. The main issue with the lawsuit was intent. The jury found that it was Denise's intent to interfere with Emma's employment. Denise explained to me that her intent was to gather information because the police had been informed about what was going on and wouldn't do anything about it. Denise felt like she had to do something.
My intent was to gather information, and that's how am I to gather information? And the other distressing thing about it is that I told the police were well aware of it. The DA's office was well aware of it. And who's out there asking for the computer? Nobody. You know, so I'm like, okay, I can't just come right out and ask. And the coworker is literally, she's like, email him today. I'm afraid, and I don't want to be, you know, involved. And I'm like, oh God. You know, I don't know what would have been done differently. I even looked at the letter a couple times. I'm like, the only thing I would have changed is that she was mentally unstable or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, probably, you know, because I can't prove that. I can prove everything else that I wrote about her.
The Colorado Springs Police Department has stated to the media that they have a person of interest in the case, but they never say who it is. During the lawsuit, this information was revealed.
That's what's so just very odd about all of this is that they talk to me about it all the time. When they released it, it has been public, but it's, and I have the public document. So through the lawsuit, during that court process, Detective Montez stated that Emma Bradshaw was a person of interest. So that is the, under oath, that is the one time that they have publicly stated it. And they'll state that there is a person of interest, but the public information officer at the police department, I was actually going to call him and go, is there a reason? I know investigators will tell you, oh, we don't like to mention a suspect or person of interest because then that gives them, you know, a heads up that they are one. But she knows she is one because she was in court. So is there a particular reason? And to be honest, in my mind, I think one of the reasons they don't want to completely is because then pressure's on them again. Well, if you have a person of interest, what's being done on the case? But they have said that she is a person of interest, and they did publicly state it in a public court document.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. As I'm sure you can imagine, it must be so frustrating to have the person that you believe is involved in the disappearance of your brother win a lawsuit against you. Denise explained to me that some positive things have come from it too.
The lawsuit was actually beneficial in the fact that it preserved now a lot of information. Even the good news is in a criminal court, you would not be able to use, I don't know if it's in every state, but I know in Colorado, you would not be able to use someone's past history per se. So in other words, that she had gone in and stalked another family and broken into their home. Well, because it was a civil suit, we were able to introduce that because I posted about it on Facebook. That civil suit can be used in a criminal setting. It wouldn't have been used by itself. I got an attorney that was a criminal and civil attorney, and I paid the extra money for it so that evidence would be preserved in that sense, that we would be able to use, you know, what we could. When she's on the stand, she talks like very convincing, like the extra details in the story about how her granddaughter had to get a coat because she went to the girls' memorial. And of course, the granddaughter won't talk to the detectives. We have people who just won't talk. She had gone to work before Christopher was taken, and she told people at work she was engaged to my dad. She said, "Gil, I'm engaged to Gil Abeda." And she wore a ring to work, and she was showing everybody the ring. Because I posted about it, we had to prove that it was true. And so we had one of the coworkers back from 1986 come in and testify that that was true. And the reason she remembered was a couple reasons. One, because when my mom had started looking into it, she started to look into all the coworkers, and she found out about her, and she asked the police to talk to her. So the police did document that that's what was said back in like 1992, 93. But she said she herself was engaged, and she remembered looking at the ring Emma had and going, "Oh, wow, that's a really big ring," like compared to her ring she had. So Emma's story and version in her deposition, this was interesting. As soon as that ring got brought up, my attorney starts to ask her about the ring. The room is full of mainly males in the room, all sitting on a conference table. And he says, "And you know about the ring?" And she's like, "Oh, yeah. I wore that ring into work because I was trying to sell it." And they said, "Oh," she goes, "yeah, I was trying to sell it to," what's her name? Helen. Helen was her name. She doesn't remember anybody's last name. But, and he says, "Oh, okay. So you were trying to sell the ring." She goes, "Yeah. Oh, I remember. Yeah, her name was Helen. And she had big boobs." And then the whole room got quiet. And how does an attorney respond to that? Because she makes these like shocking statements that you go, okay, well, if she remembers that, then maybe her story is, but that has nothing to do, you know what I mean? And why would, too, as a woman, would you ever even say that? Like that, there's other ways to remember this person, or you would say, you know what, I remember her, I don't remember her last name, but maybe we could potentially get her information so it could prove what I'm saying is true. But no, none of that, nothing. But what does that show also is that, okay, we have a eyewitness saying, yeah, she was coming in, and the eyewitness says, and I remember after Christopher was taken, I asked her, the name came up like in the news, and I said, is that Gila Beta, the same, like a Beta? Because there's also a famous Spanish artist. And she goes, I actually have the print of the artist. His last name is a Beta. And Emma said, no, he pronounces his name, and she gave a different pronunciation. So she didn't want to be associated with the Beta, you know, that was, and she never went to work and said, oh, hey, everybody, my boyfriend's baby was just kidnapped this week. And, you know, but yet it mandated the news. She never said a word to anybody about any of it. We know she missed work after Christopher disappeared. We know that for sure. And the day he disappeared, she didn't go into work. And we know that she went to New Mexico based off of information we gathered. I guess with the detectives, it's like one thing. You can prove somebody is not truthful. You can prove somebody is maybe not necessarily a good person. But can we prove, yeah, we have lots of little bits and pieces of information and circumstantial evidence, but can we prove beyond a reasonable doubt that she took Christopher? And do we have Christopher? No.
One thing that we do know about Emma is her history with other men, which is documented in police reports and court documents. During the lawsuit, they were able to explore this even further.
The police reports were one guy where she broke into his house and slashed his waterbed and stuff like that. Well, in the police report, and this is important because in the police report, she says, the police officer says, you know, he's been trying to get rid of her. And she claims that, no, she didn't, wasn't involved. But in court, she actually has forgotten what she told them or told in the police report. Because in court, she actually said, oh, I was young and foolish. He missed my son's birthday and I slashed his waterbed. But yet she told the police she didn't do it back in 1979. Now she can play it off as being, oh, it was just a lover's quarrel and I went in there and it was no big deal. But no, she left a butcher knife in his front door. Like, that's a big deal. Like, that's beyond just being a lover's quarrel. Like, I'm telling you, I'm angry at you. And he says he's been trying to get rid of her. So that one. And then the second incident where she had this affair with this other married man, the reason that they wanted to keep it quiet was because he is an artist in this little city and everybody knows who he is. And he was embarrassed. We did subpoena him and he did come to court for, you know, where he did say, yes, she did stalk my family. Yes, she broke into our house. And it was when he was trying to break up with her and she stole his family pictures off the wall. And then she left a threatening letter threatening his children. They saw her parked in front of his children's school. And that's when he went to the district attorney's office. He didn't even go to the police. And then they arrested her. And so this is the kind of mind and pattern that you're, you know, are dealing with.
After witnessing Emma testify, Denise was able to see the elaborate stories that she comes up with. The stories are filled with so many details, it makes them seem believable.
What throws me off is the stories that are told. There's so many, you listen to them and you go, wow, that's pretty interesting and all the details. And so the stories that are told gives me somewhat of a like, okay, if he was taken, she is the person of interest. And if she did take him, did she tell one of her stories to somebody? This is my baby. And that, you know, I don't want him. I can't this and that. And somebody believed it. And then they found out he was kidnapped later and then realized that, hey, we're already attached and we're in it and we're not going to say anything now. And he's, you know, but then I go back to, he'd be now 32 years old. How does somebody, I know you can falsify documents and that kind of thing, but man, like not to have any, how do you get like a social security number and records to be able to exist and have go to school or work and that kind of thing. And if he's out there. So I just don't know. And then sadly, you know, there's people, like I said, who have not been willing to talk, who have not told the truth. that's what's discouraging for my family, is that imagine going on like this for 30 years and you have people who you can prove beyond a reasonable doubt that they have lied to detectives who are trying to get to the resolution to your missing brother's case. And yet the district attorney doesn't file charges against that person. So that means that the police will continue to ask questions and they can continue to be lied to, and there's no repercussions for it, and you never would solve a case. And I realize that people lie all the time and lie to police, but you're dealing with a felony charge here of kidnapping and a baby missing for so long. You can prove that the lies have been told, but there's no charges being filed. And it's hard to sit back and go, why? And so we have gone down to the DA's office and we have requested and we've asked the reason why, and we're not given an answer. If you could give me an answer, if you could give me like exactly why, and I would be able to understand, or, hey, this is why, or, you know, we're proceeding in the investigation and this is why, then, you know, maybe I could understand it.
In 2016, Bernice Abeda was diagnosed with terminal cancer. She began pushing for more media attention to hopefully find Christopher, since she was given just months to live. She never stopped looking for her son until the very end.
My mom never stopped searching for her son, and my dad didn't either. My mom, she was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and she lived 9 months after that. And in that 9 months, she still attended events for other missing people. And she was very, very weak. And just months before she died, she died in February. In October was one of her last meetings. She requested a meeting with the district attorney's office. And it was the district attorney's office and the police department. And she made it very clear what she thought had happened to her son and what she wanted to be done with the investigation. She did go into the police department while she knew she was dying, and they had already interviewed her numerous times, but she still wanted to get on record everything and anything that she could, knowing that she was going to be gone, just so that it would be preserved. She really, truly had a love in her heart, and she knew her son. He was an innocent baby. She felt as though he was alive. She still, even until she died, she didn't feel like he was gone. I don't necessarily share that same feeling as her. I feel as though Christopher was taken out of someone being vindictive, and I don't know if he would have been kept alive. And I think that maybe the reason we haven't found him in 3 decades is because he was murdered, but I don't know that answer. And, you know, we've had literally in the last several years, there's been DNA taken of several people, someone who called up and said they felt they were Christopher themselves. And after 30 years, we totally guard our emotions. So when I get the information, I don't release that information because I don't want to give that false hope. Even when my mom was dying, we had someone, they were taking DNA of someone, and I didn't tell her because I didn't want her to feel what it feels like. Because I know what it feels like when there's a potential hope there that you're going to have answers, and then you find out it's not Christopher. So I remember I didn't tell her, and I made a conscious decision because I said she was going through so much, and I didn't want her to feel that. Even though we've been through it so much. So it's sad. This story is, there's a lot of components in this, and there's so many stories wrapped up in the story, things that my mom did that are just amazing to me. I mean, I have bins of her detective work that she did this is before computers, and it was just so time consuming. Like, it's just papers on papers when she would investigate one lead. She did say to her friend that if she didn't do that, she probably wouldn't have been able to exist. Like, she was doing something to find her son. So in that sense, it kept her going. But every lead you would check out and then find out that, oh, it's not, this isn't it, it isn't him, it's not him. And everything continued to go back around in a circle. And you're like, who would be capable of doing this? Who would be capable of walking into a home and not afraid? Like, you have to have some, be somewhat fearless. And also, what motivation to take him? And then, you know, the big question is, what was different about that night than any other night? Why didn't they take him two nights before or a night before? Well, it was the first night my dad spent the night back at home. That was different. That next day was the first day we didn't get hang up calls. He didn't just disappear. He couldn't walk. They know what happened. And they've watched our family for 30 years. They watched my mom flee and cry, and they watched. How do you sit back and watch a family grieve and feel okay about yourself and not say anything?
Before Bernice passed away, she voiced some regrets that she hoped would help other families going through this.
And when she found out she had cancer, she said that, and she did this in an interview, and I believe it very much because I knew her too well, but she said that she feels bad because she forgot that she had joy in her life before Christopher was taken. Like, she forgot about so many memories of her other children and things and that she did have because everything was so, I've got to find my son. When you have a missing child and you don't know, like my mom said, there were so many things that would go through each age that he was, like when he was a, she was afraid to give information out because if he was out there, somebody would harm him. And then she said she would look at children at every age, like Christopher's six now, and she would look at every six-year-old, even teenagers. I remember going to the store with her, and it would have been when Christopher would have been about 18. And I remember going, Mom, stop. You would look at that different age of what his age would be. Everybody that was that age, because you just never stopped. I don't know if there is a way. I don't know if she could have done it any other way. Because I think back about her life, on her life, and I think about how 32 years she looked for him, and that was her life. And could she have lived more of a productive life? But her son is missing, so there was nothing. What do you do? She couldn't just go on. I don't know. Like she said, she's like, I wish I could tell parents who are going through this to try not to lose the joy around them that's going on. But she goes, it's easier said than done.
Bernice Abeda passed away on February 12th, 2017, without knowing what happened to her son. Bernice had done a lot to support other families of the missing. In episode 58 of this show, I covered Kelsey Schelling's story, and you heard from her mom, Laura. Well, Laura and Bernice had become very close and would attend events together. I contacted Laura to see if she wanted me to include anything in this episode. She told me that Bernice was one of the most special people that she'd ever met. Even though they only knew each other for a short period of time and were decades apart in age, it was like they had known one another forever. She said that she didn't know how Bernice was able to remain such a kind and gracious person after living so many years with this kind of trauma. Denise told me that Laura came to visit her mom right before she passed away.
She came, was it the day before or the day of? I think it was the day before my mom passed away, and she held her hand. And she was actually one my mom had said, as this is after she found out she had cancer, and she said what I told you earlier, I wish I could tell you to live in moments of joy and not, like, you're doing something for your daughter, but don't, like, that is your life. Like, because that was her life. That was my mom's life. And she didn't want to see Laura have to do that, too. Do you know what I mean? But again, even Laura's like, yeah, it's easier said than done, especially with, you know, who is responsible for this. And this person, you could end this for everybody. You could just tell us and, you know, end it. And I think that it helped both Laura and my mom to have each other because they knew. You knew the obstacles you had. You knew what you had to do. And Laura's another one where she wouldn't pass up an interview. You know, that's always telling to me about some of these cases. It's not fun. It's not natural for people like my mom and Laura. They didn't go to school to, you know, to be in front of the cameras. It's not a natural thing or anything. But when you're talking about your child, it was natural for them, you know, because they're wanting information. And so, yeah, there was a bond there for sure.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. Even though Bernice is no longer here to search, the rest of the family isn't giving up.
So at this point, there's no justice. It's just a matter of having some sort of peace for my family, for Christopher. Also knowing what my mom did for 32 years, I will not let her time go to waste. I will not say, well, she's gone now and, you know, we haven't found Christopher, and all the time that she spent looking for him, for that time to go to waste. So we'll keep his story alive, and it is work, and it's constantly making sure that the detectives know we're here, and hey, have you followed up on this person and this information? And there, even after 30 years, there's still information that people would be surprised that you go, hey, did they follow up on that? No, they didn't. And they still need to.
They made some progress in the past couple of months by getting another agency involved in the investigation.
My mom had been asking for years, I had been asking for years for the Colorado Bureau of Investigations involvement. And in December, they said they were, and they did last month, they submitted his case to the Colorado Bureau of Investigation. So they've assigned an agent with the CBI, and they have a lot more investigative resources that can be tapped into than the local. You figure the local police department is one cold case detective, and he has like 90 cold cases. Christopher's case is a full-time job in itself, and that one cold case detective is being taken out to work on active cases as well. So you can put this out there as much as you want, but if you're not actively going, hey, we need to pursue this person, we need to talk to this person, I get it. Christopher's case is a 30-year-old case, 32 years old, and you have a new case of a crime that's happened. You got to solve those new cases because the information is there at your hands. It's just that what disappoints me is that Christopher's case did not get the investigation it should have, and he deserved that, and it upsets me. I work closely with the Colorado Springs Police Department now, and we have a good relationship, but sadly, those initial investigators made some terrible mistakes, and missed opportunities that we could have probably had closure by now or some resolution. After 3 decades, there's no justice that will bring back those 3 decades or what we have. We want answers. If Christopher's out there, we want to know. We just want him to know we never stopped looking, and we want to know. And then if he has been murdered, then yeah, you want some sort of justice, but you also want to get this bad, bad person who murdered an innocent baby, who even took an innocent baby off the streets, because I guarantee you, if they're capable of that, they've probably done other crimes, I would imagine. And the between the court records and the police records, these were multiple incidents. They weren't one. They weren't the same individual where someone's house had been broken into. I mean, anybody capable of breaking into another person's house, just let alone, and not breaking in to steal valuable items for monetary reasons, but just breaking in to be a mean, bad person and put fear in another person, that's a different mindset.
Denise told me what they're pushing for today to hopefully move this case forward.
So as pieces of the puzzle come together, we definitely know we were being stalked. We definitely have records of that information. And we know that there were people who were not investigated early on. We know that people have lied. And that, to me, is a baby went missing. Why would somebody lie about any circumstances around a baby going missing? If your recollection isn't there, that's one thing. But flat out lies, then that should be a big red alarm. At this point, we have a lot of information, and we absolutely believe that a grand jury investigation would move the case forward because of the fact that the police have named a person of interest. You know, it has been 30 years. It's a long time. We have had people, thankfully, that have come forward with some bits and pieces of information, but we also know there are people who have the information who haven't come forward, which is just appalling to me. They're very well aware of Christopher's case, but for whatever reason, they have chosen to keep quiet. It's disturbing that you have former law enforcement officer who won't talk to police. And that also is, why? Why? What is there to hide? And there's a felony and a misdemeanor charge that could be charged against people who have lied to in Colorado, who have lied to detectives in regard to an investigation. We're not sure why charges haven't been filed yet and if they are going to be filed. And then ultimately, we want a grand jury investigation. We don't know what they're waiting for. We are pleased that last year, the district attorney's office assigned it was either late 2016 or early 2017, they assigned an assistant district attorney. Don't know why it took them 30 years to do it, but at least they've assigned an assistant district attorney.
Going back to the night of Christopher's disappearance, I know many people have wondered how a baby could just vanish and no one saw or heard a thing. Well, maybe someone did see something.
The next door neighbor, they had a dog, and she said that her dog didn't bark that night. And it wasn't completely unusual. Sometimes he would bark with strangers. None of the neighbors heard anything. Now, a neighbor came forward literally in the last 2 years and submitted a tip that bothered them for 20-something years, and that was a legitimate tip. They said that when the police were going door-to-door asking neighbors if they had heard or seen anything, he was at work. So his wife had answered the door, and she didn't really have any information, but it had bothered him all these years. He said that, I can't give you the time frame, but within some time of Christopher's disappearance, before his disappearance, there was a car parked. His house was catty corner to ours. We were kind of on the end, and there was a car parked catty corner. A woman was parked inside the car, and you could see our total house from that car being parked. And he went out to the car and asked if he could help her. And she said, oh, I'm just parked over here because I'm picking someone up. And she pointed to our house from her house to go somewhere. He says she got out of the car and she started to walk that direction, but it was far enough Our house would have had a lot of parking out in front that you could have parked out in front or across the street, but it was kind of catty corner. And he said it was noticeable enough where it bothered him that this person was parked there for a while sitting in the car. And then so he gave the description to the officers. It's enough information where another reason why this should go to a grand jury investigation, because that information needs to be given to them.
Another thing that I've wondered about was if there was ever any evidence that would suggest that more than one person was involved in Christopher's disappearance.
That's a good question. And as of recently, there's a tip that's being followed through on that would indicate maybe. How much involvement, I don't know. But even for a person to create an alibi for another individual, knowing that they're doing that, that's involvement that you're trying to cover up on this person's crime, knowing that they did this crime. Yeah, it's likely. I don't know how many people would go along with a baby being kidnapped. And I don't know if they would go along with it for the fact that they themselves are threatened for another reason or they're afraid of their involvement. I've thought about that, though. And I've thought about the former law enforcement officer, the detective / sheriff who won't talk to detectives. I've thought that the reason he may not want to talk is because there's information he doesn't want people to find out.
I know that many of you who have listened to part one have commented about your frustrations with how the case was initially handled. Luckily, the new detectives on the case are being more proactive, even though this is just one of the many cold cases that they're working on. I asked Denise, looking back almost 32 years later, in hindsight, why she felt the case went off the tracks early on.
My theory on the why is a few reasons. One, I think that when Christopher disappeared, the police they needed to find his kidnapper and they didn't know who, what. The initial investigators, there were two initial detectives, and one of them brought up my mom's religion quite a bit. At the time of Christopher's disappearance, she was a Jehovah's Witness, which was different. He would bring that up often, like, you know, your God is this. And then he told her, I'm a born again Christian. It was enough where it's like, why does the religion play any factor in this? Or what does there do? My mom had felt that there was some religious discrimination, like he didn't like that religion. And I believe she was probably right. That was some of it. And then also feeling like, how does somebody not hear anything? How does somebody walk into a house and nobody heard anything? Of course, the suspicions are going to swirl around the family. But what the detectives have now that the detectives didn't have back then is they have a family history of 30 years. And they can see proof beyond proof of a family and my parents who looked for their son and gave up everything they had to look for him. You can't fake saying, hey, we got to come up with money somehow and get over to this other state and everybody pull their money together to go see if that could potentially be Christopher. And, you know, we did it and for years and they did what they had to do for their child.
We know that the police focused on Bernice for many years. But what motive did they think that she had to harm her baby?
The original detectives, I'm like, give me a motive. Give me something. Like, I told the detectives that when I met with them in 2009. I said, if my mom had been a person of interest, give me something, guys. Like, give me a reason. Give me, you know, I've been with her all this time. And they said, well, it was the dynamics. And I said, what do you mean the dynamics? And they said, your parents had been separated. And I said, okay. And I said, but you forgot about that third person in that dynamics. There were more than two people and the reason they were separated, you know, my mom did not know. That was the other important thing is my mom did not have confirmation that there was an affair. She suspected my dad. So when she got separated, she said that she literally found lipstick on his collar, on a shirt on the floor in their closet. She says that the shirt was all by itself and lipstick's on the collar. And so she confronted him with it. He denied it. You would have thought I was 15, but I didn't know. I honestly did not know they were having any major problems. I didn't know about this, even her confronting him with an affair. I just knew that, hey, dad's going to go stay up at his house and pueblo that he owns that my brother lived at for a while, but there's something there. But I didn't know for sure what was going on. My older sister said she was aware, but she was like 19 or 20. So it wasn't until the day Christopher went missing that she got confirmation that he had been having an affair. But she said, I said, and how'd you feel about that, Mom? And she says, Denise, it didn't matter. Like, that was nothing. Like, I didn't think anything. I was like, oh, okay, my baby's missing. Like, that didn't, I don't even care, because I kind of had suspected it anyhow, but I didn't know for sure. But we had been together a long time. But she goes, that wasn't even like, oh, he committed adultery type of thing, you know, but it wasn't. She says, I was more concerned about Christopher missing. But why that was important is that she didn't know about it to that day is because the person of interest had tried to insinuate that, well, she did this online on one of her posts. She said something to the fact that, well, if Mrs. Abeda was jealous of her, she was going to try to blame her for, like, basically giving the idea that my mom would have done something to Christopher and then try to blame her for the kidnapping. But my mom didn't even know about her, you know, but if anything, it was reversed. That's kind of what I think. And then, oh, there was somebody who called in to the police department and said that my mom had been having an affair with some guy, and they made up some crazy story, and that Christopher was up in somewhere. And so they followed through on that, and there was nothing. I mean, people will do that. They'll call in fake leads, but sadly, it was somebody who almost appeared to like know more information. Well, if we had been being stalked, obviously somebody would know more information about our family than, you know, the norm. There were a lot of side things like that, that my mom's like, don't they see it? This is all that it's somebody trying to throw them off. But no. Mm-mm.
So what happened to Christopher Abeda on July 15th, 1986? Is it possible that he could still be out there alive and not know who he is? Denise told me that her mom never gave up hope that he was out there alive, but she feels very conflicted about that.
I don't know if he is out there. He'd be, what, 32 this year? 32 years old. And I remember my mom forever thought by the time he turns 18, maybe we'll have something that comes in then, because he's going to be looking for a job. He's going to be needing documentation. He's going to be needing paperwork. And I remember her, even when he was in elementary school ages, her reaching out, sending flyers to elementary schools in all sorts of different states. She would just send a packet of flyers to elementary schools. She was so desperate to get answers. And she told me one time, it's like, she says, you know, if you have children and you go to a department store and for that brief second, your child goes underneath a rack or isn't there by your side. And you, that moment of panic where you're like, oh, where'd they go? She says, imagine living like that for years and years and years, that you're in a state of panic. Like I said, my mom, even till she died, felt that he was out there. But could it have been a mother? You don't want to believe your child is dead or gone. And so it could have been a mother thing too. But then, and it's also hard to understand how somebody would be capable of literally kidnapping a baby and murdering a baby. I mean, just full up, that's your reason for taking the baby. And so it's hard to fathom that, but so we just don't know.
Some people focus on these two polygraphs that Bernice took. The one she failed and the other was inconclusive. Personally, I don't put much stock into polygraphs since they aren't reliable. Would a mother have dedicated her entire life to finding her son if she had something to do with his disappearance? Then you have Emma, who we know was having an affair with Gil Abeda. We know her history with other men. We know that she was trying to contact Gil that night, and she is now considered a person of interest. Was Christopher's disappearance motivated by anger over the reconciliation and a need for revenge? What do you think happened to Christopher? Before we get to the end of this episode, I want to play one more clip for you. This is Denise talking about the one time that she ran into Emma in public.
The only time I ever saw her was, but we had gone to Denver, my whole family, my mom and my sisters and my children. And we were headed back, and it's our rating. So we'd gone to a water park, and we were headed back, and we stopped at a restaurant, and I walked in the restaurant, and she was there with her brothers. Well, I've spoken to her brothers, so I recognized them immediately. And she was there with her family. And I immediately turned around and I caught my sister and I said, "Hey, we can't eat here. It's a small restaurant. Tell mom we're going someplace else." My mom went back into the car and my kids were already in the restaurant and they were like, "Why aren't we eating here?" And I'm like, "No, we've got to here." Just, I was somewhat distraught and I said, "Here's some money. Just go over to Burger King. We're just going to take it in the car and go, and we'll go someplace else." So we locked eyes. We saw each other. I sent my kids next door. They're teenagers. I went, two of them. Anyways, I sent them over to the Burger King and I walked across the street. I turned around to look at the restaurant and she was standing at the window waving at me. And I remember very, very vividly in my mind, my foot was shaking. And I remember in my mind, I thought, should I go back in there? And I saw in my mind, police. Like I saw a flash of like the detective and police. And I'm like, no, because what's it going to do? There's nothing you can do. But I thought, who does that? Even if you are, what kind of person knows what we're doing and does that? It in their 60s. She was in her 60s at the time. And I'm like, I would never see like my mom doing something like that, or somebody, even me, like you stand up and you're waving out the window. She's waving at me.
That brings us to the end of episode 115. This was a very difficult story for me to cover. As many of you know, my little guy is the same age that Christopher was when he disappeared. Hearing Denise talk about all the things that he was doing really hit home, because my little guy is doing all those same things right now. If you go listen to all the episodes of this podcast, you'll find that some you can just relate to more than others because of your own life experience. When we look at a case that has gone unsolved for almost 32 years, you can see how it hasn't just devastated a family, but also entirely changed the course of their lives. Denise told me that she can't even imagine where her life would be right now had this never happened. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children made a video about Christopher's case. It featured Denise's daughter raising money for the organization, and you can see how much this has already affected so many generations of their family. If you have any information about the disappearance of Christopher Abeda, you can contact 1-800-THE-LOST. You can follow this case on Facebook, where there's a community page named Christopher Abeda. I'd like to thank Denise for taking the time to speak with me for these two episodes. If you'd like to reach me, I'm on Facebook, where there's a page and a discussion group. Just search for The Vanished Podcast and you'll find it. I'm on Twitter at The Vanished Pod and on Instagram as well. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. Join me next week. I'll be covering a case from Washington, D.C. Thanks for listening.
I believe I know who kidnapped my brother. And I'm allowed to believe that. And I do believe it. And in that sense, like I said, the good thing about the whole court case is that it has preserved some of the information. And especially now that my mom is gone, she also has her information is there. And so that if this does, you know, eventually we get to a criminal trial of some sort, then that would be there. When you talk about like the lawsuit, I'm like, yeah, okay, I was sued. No, it's no fun. And it was a lot of, you know, the emotional aspect of it and everything, but we've been through a heck of a lot. So it's a lawsuit. You know, no, I wouldn't wish it upon anybody, and especially under these circumstances where this person is the person of interest, and you go, wow, where did things go wrong, like with our justice system and how we've been wanting, all we want is, you know, answers, and we wanted Christopher's case to be investigated, and it wasn't investigated, and so we did what any family would do, which is investigate and look for information. There are people who I have contacted and literally said to me, quote unquote, Well, you found me. I wasn't going to, I didn't really want to get involved, but now that you're talking to me, okay. And I'm like, what the, like, you know, and if you didn't reach out to these people, and honestly, these people have given information that has been pertinent to the investigation, and baffled by how many people who live their lives and are like, I'm not getting involved, but they could potentially solve a case with what they know. This has been a long time. Our lives were changed drastically since 1986. I can't imagine what our lives would be like without, you know, it being, I guess, normal, if you were to put it.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.